Hey friends, today's episode has a content warning for domestic abuse. While we don't get into detail, I recognize that this may be triggering for some folks. If you're in a domestic abuse situation, know that you can get help. If you're in the U.S., call the Domestic Abuse Hotline at 1-877-2-NDV or 1-877-863-6338. There's a way out, and you're not alone.
Welcome to the Ashes to Wings podcast, where we tell stories of overcomers and give you tips and tricks to living a fuller, more embodied life. Here's your host, Jenny O'Connor.
Hey friends, welcome to Ashes to Wings. Today we'll be talking with Helen Snape. Helen is a healthy relationships coach who helps good girls say no by building boundaries, confidence, and healthy relationship skills. Helen has been coaching for over 10 years and has a degree in psychology from the University of Warwick and is qualified in mindfulness and coaching with trauma. Helen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Jenny, for having me on your amazing podcast.
So Helen, explain to us what a healthy relationships coach is.
Yeah, this is about unlearning what we saw growing up that wasn't so good about relationships, and learning what actually works. So this is about stopping that kind of needing to perhaps fix other people, needing kind of control what's going on. It's about bringing the focus back to our relationship that we have with ourselves, because I believe that that is the foundation for all of our relationships with other people. And so if we don't have a good relationship with ourselves, how on earth are we going to have good relationships with other people?
Absolutely. That's so key. I see so many people who are looking for someone else to complete them. And you have to be whole before you can be in a healthy relationship with someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I find and what I found for myself was that a lot of us grew up experiencing unhealthy relationships, or maybe, you know, our parents, you know, weren't the perfect parents. I mean, whose parents are, right?
Yes.
And yeah, so we absorb what we see. You know, even if our parents like told us how to have wonderful relationships, if they weren't having wonderful relationships, we absorb what our parents do and we take that with us. And we either carry on doing perhaps what they've been doing or react really strongly against it. And we kind of go in the opposite direction.
Absolutely. Yeah. It feels like you pull a little bit of it with you, but then there's this rebellion to be different. Yes. So what led you to coaching people in relationships?
It was really through my own experience that I decided to become a healthy relationships coach. My background is actually in human resources. And so when I first trained as a coach, I thought that I would be an executive coach or a career coach. But as I went on my own coaching journey, I realized that that wasn't really where my passion was. And that my passion really was to help women who are stuck in the same place that I was 6 years ago.
So tell me about where you were 6 years ago.
Yeah, 6 years ago, I was just coming out of an abusive marriage. I had been married for 18 years and I was at the verge of a breakdown at that point. And maybe I would have carried on a bit longer, but there was a real turning point for me because my mum also got diagnosed with myeloma, which is an incurable cancer, in 2015. And that was the real turning point for me because I recognized how short life is and how precious life is. And something really woke up inside of me. I just was starting to ask myself, is this what life is? And don't I deserve a better life? And within 2 months, I had moved out.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm so proud of you for getting out of that situation and recognizing it for what it was. I know it's not easy.
No, I would say that leaving an abusive marriage is the hardest thing that I've ever done. I mean, I was terrified. I was terrified of how I was going to cope on my own. But of course, even though, you know, my husband's behavior had been really bad, I still cared for him. And I was still kind of bonded with him and I was worried about him. And so it was very, very hard to leave, very hard to cut those ties and not go back.
Yeah, it's never a black and white issue. It's never an easy decision when you're leaving a domestic abuse situation. So I'm proud of you for finding your way out.
Thank you. I'm proud of me too.
Yes. Yeah. It's good to recognize those moments in our lives and celebrate them for what they are.
Mm.
Yes. So what do you wish you had known when you were in that relationship that you know now?
I wish I had known what healthy relationships are and what unhealthy relationships are. You know, there were red flags when I first met my husband, but I ignored them. You know, when he began to make little digs at me, I would just think, oh, well, he's having a bad day. And then when it started to escalate and he would fly into the most amazing rages, and then afterwards he would be really sorry and explain how he had some health condition, I would just be really sympathetic and understanding and thought I was being kind of special and understanding in a way that nobody else was. And I didn't recognize, how is this for me?
Yeah.
And I wasn't asking, is this relationship good for me? I was just basking in the attention that I was getting.
So it's sort of that, you know, I know we're all familiar with the fight, flight, or freeze. And there's also the fawn reaction to fear, which is to make yourself sort of submissive and I'm sorry and I'm here for you and taking care of them. There's another reaction of fear that many of us deal with.
Yeah.
And did you feel support from your circles while you were going through this, or did anyone know?
I only let a couple of people know. I mean, by the end of my marriage, most of my support system was cut off anyway. So I hadn't really been in touch with my family. I didn't really have any friends. I only really had sort of my husband's friends. I did let my parents know that I was intending to leave the marriage because I thought, you know, my husband may well contact them and, you know, wonder where I've gone. So I let them know before I left, just in case he would call them.
That's smart. I've seen that fairly often with women who are in domestic violence situations. They start to cut off your circle. They start to tighten the circle and cut off your connections. So it's just the two of you. And they're so charming. They're so charming to everybody else that you would never guess that this is somebody who's doing this behind closed doors.
Yeah. Thank you, Jenny, for saying that. When I met my husband, he was so intelligent and so charming. And he could hold the attention of a room full of people so easily and entertain them for hours. And you would never know. Yeah, as you say, you would never know what was going on behind closed doors.
Absolutely.
When he could be just such a different person. And in terms of like cutting me off from family and friends, he began to pick holes in things that they'd said. He would find ways to sow division until it almost became a forced choice for me of, well, it's either me or them. And of course, at the time, I was in loyal wife mode, so I chose him.
And now you choose yourself.
And now I choose myself.
Oh, what a beautiful smile. For people who are just listening, she just lit up with the most beautiful smile. Oh.
And by choosing myself, I then feel like I can fill myself up and then I can genuinely be there for other people.
Yes. Oh, that's so good. So how has mindfulness, because I know mindfulness is important to you, how has that affected your relationships now that you're in healthier relationships?
I first learned about mindfulness on a course a few years ago. It was an introduction to mindfulness for coaching. And as part of that, we also learned to start our own meditation practices. And something just switched on for me. I'd heard about being the observer of your thoughts and feelings before, and it just hadn't really landed with me before. But the way this teacher taught us, it suddenly made sense. And I found that I was able to start stepping back from my own thoughts and feelings in a way that I hadn't done before. So it was beginning to disidentify from my thoughts and feelings and just be able to kind of start saying, oh, look, I'm having that thought. Oh, I'm having that feeling. And then later on, I began to kind of find out about self-compassion practices, which obviously that goes hand in hand with mindfulness. And it just makes it even more powerful.
In somatics, we talk about that, you know, the difference between I am angry, which is, you know, you're embodying that emotion, versus I'm not angry, which is denial, versus something inside me is angry. You know, which is still recognizing it, but it's separate from yourself. acknowledging it and allowing it to be there and to serve its purpose and being curious about it without fully embodying it. And that's such a difference. So you've mentioned moving your body in new ways. As a dance teacher and a somatic coach, I'm a big believer in the power of movement. Tell me more about your experience.
This kind of reawakening of my body and movement has come about as I felt freer. In my marriage, I didn't really sing or dance because my husband didn't like it. And yet, naturally, I love singing and dancing. I am a regular dancer to YouTube videos around the living room. I mean, like, it's embarrassing.
I love that. Yes.
I just find that freedom in dancing, in just like having a mad dance to things, just freeing up my body. And then I've also discovered hula hooping, which is brilliant for building my core.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm still working on keeping it up. When I was a kid, I could keep it up, but as an adult, I'm still working on that.
It's hard work.
It is. Yeah.
It really is hard work. And then I've also began to find through studying body-oriented coaching how movement is helping free up my breath and my voice mm-hmm. in ways that I'm like, oh, that's amazing. Like, it makes so much of a difference.
And did you find coming out of a domestic abuse situation that it was difficult to move your body at first or to feel comfort in moving your body?
That's an interesting question, Jenny. I've not really thought about that before. I think there was a real thrill in being able to move my body freely. When I first moved out into my own place, I remember dancing around the flat. And it felt maybe a little bit scary, actually. You know, now I'm thinking about it, but it was also really liberating.
I love that. We see that at Studio Phoenix quite a bit with pole dancing, especially because we're moving in a sensual way. You know, sometimes it's a little bit scary, especially if you're coming out of a situation where you didn't have control over your body in one way or another. To start to take that control back and that sovereignty over your body back, it can release emotions in us. And so I absolutely love when women are coming out of those sorts of situations, being able to see them be empowered and moving their body in a way that brings them joy. So yeah, that visual of you just dancing around your flat is so beautiful. I can feel the freedom in it.
Yeah.
So Helen, what role do boundaries play in all of this?
Boundaries are so important for helping us know where we end and where other people begin. Boundaries give us the framework for knowing what is okay for me and what isn't okay for me. And we can learn to build energetic boundaries that protect our energy and our emotions.
I feel like it's something as women that we're told so often, set boundaries, but there's not a whole lot of clear guidance in how to set a boundary. So how would you tell our listeners to set an energetic boundary?
To set an energetic boundary, I would say a few steps, actually. First of all is awareness. You know, they say that, you know, what you give your attention to tends to grow. And so we need to start paying attention to actually, where is my energy at? So, for example, you know, when you're with a particular person, where is your energy? Just start asking yourself, get curious. Is my energy, is it kind of staying in me, for example? Or am I giving it away to you? Or actually, is my energy leaving the building? Maybe I don't really want to be here. So my energy's going, basically. Just beginning to raise your awareness, having an energy journal can be really helpful. And then the second thing that I know helps a lot of people is to visualize a shield. Imagine like this shield that's kind of a couple of feet out from your body and it just goes all the way around you, like from front to back. And it's an egg shape. And it's your shield. It's your boundary. Like everything inside of this boundary is your energy, your emotions, your beliefs, your values, you name it. And everything outside of it, that's other people's. And so it can be really helpful to start visualizing this shield to protect your energy and to kind of erect your shield, perhaps, when you know that you're going into a difficult situation.
And you strike me as an empath, yes?
Yes, I am an empath. Yeah.
So I know all about that picking up everybody else's energy thing. Yes, it can be very draining. It can be very draining. And so I think especially if you identify as an empath, it's so important to have that strong shield and that ability to recognize, oh, I'm starting to feel drained. Maybe I need to energetically take a step back and put that shield up to preserve my own energy. And you can still be there for someone without depleting your own energy.
Yes. Yes. This is where boundaries come in, and they're so beautiful because they can help us to protect our own energy and hold on to it and not give it away to other people. You know, similarly, as you were saying with emotions, to be able to hold on to our own emotions and not get overwhelmed with other people's emotions, like be able to kind of hold them at the edge of our boundary and say, okay, you know, you can keep your emotions and I'll keep mine. And let's not overwhelm each other with our feelings.
So good. So how has setting boundaries helped you as a coach who's an empath? How has it made a difference in how you coach?
Setting boundaries as a coach has been really helpful just in terms of some of the basics, in terms of valuing my time and setting those clear limits. But then also in the coaching space, at the beginning of a session, just to kind of get myself really grounded, to be aware of myself more in the coaching space so that I'm not taking on other people's stuff, but also being able to still hold the space for them. And then also at the end of a session, to almost kind of cut the cords with that person, just do a little kind of cord cutting thing to kind of, okay, I've connected with this person, now let me end that. Let them go their own way in every way, maybe physically, but emotionally and energetically too.
And I'd imagine knowing who we are at our core is really important.
Yeah, Jenny, gosh, yes. Yes, knowing who we are at our core is so important because when we know who we are at our core, we're able to self-reference. We're able to know what is really true about us. I mean, I would say that I didn't really used to have a core, or I wasn't even aware of it. And I think that's actually reflected partly in my body shape, I think. I have that kind of that pear-shaped body. So I kind of go in where your core might be, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I found with pole dance, because pole dance also builds your core significantly, I've seen a correlation between when someone is building their core physically in class and their emotional core is being built along with it. So I almost feel like there's a correlation between the physical and the emotional core and our strength and the way that we carry ourselves and our confidence.
Yes. You know, for me, our core, you know, runs all the way like from the crown of our head through to our tailbone. And yet maybe it's easiest sometimes to sense it, you know, in our belly or our solar plexus or maybe our heart, because it is different for everyone. For me, it's probably more in my heart. But I'm, you know, I'm learning to build up my core like in my solar plexus more through all sorts of different means. Like, as you say, you know, and some of that is literally giving it my attention. Just giving it my attention. It's growing. I know it's growing. It's also through things like meditation and Reiki. But then also I've been building up my core through like through more physical methods, through the hula hooping and through dancing and through learning different techniques to build my breath and my voice so that I speak from my belly.
Yes. Yeah. With power. Yes. And I know you mentioned when we spoke before that you worked with a vocal coach. I find it so powerful that at the same time you were figuratively finding your voice, you were also literally finding your voice.
Jenny, yes. Yes. In terms of finding my voice in my marriage, I didn't speak up. I didn't dare to speak up. And it quite often wasn't safe for me to speak up. And then actually, even in the workplace as well, you know, I tended to be quite quiet and didn't really like giving my opinion. And so it's only been recently that I've started to feel more comfortable speaking up, just being myself. And that started with going to Toastmasters a few years ago when I was just absolutely terrified at the prospect of speaking in front of other people. And just starting that journey, just little small steps to actually being okay with speaking up for myself.
I think it's important, you know, you mentioned Toastmasters. I think it's so important who we surround ourselves with too. You know, I'm a big, big believer in surrounding yourself with the people that you want to be more like, and that we all rise together. And so being in a space where you feel comfortable to use your voice is so important. And finding, if you're not in that space, finding a space where you feel comfortable to actually truly be yourself and truly use your voice. That's so, so important.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. The environment that we're in is so important. And one of the reasons that I joined Toastmasters was that I felt that there were other people that were on the same journey as me, and that they were going to be encouraging and supportive. And whilst you do get feedback, it's constructed very carefully. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of positive feedback, and maybe you get one recommendation mm-hmm. for each speech that you do, but it's weighted for the positive. And yeah, and my particular club, they're also just lovely people, mm-hmm. which is great. It's a bonus.
Yes. Yeah, that energy is so powerful. We literally have in our waiver at our studio that we'll use positive words to talk about others and about ourselves, because what you're hearing constantly, the messages that you're hearing are so powerful. They're shaping who you are. And so I see people doing things that they never thought that they could do, myself included, because you're surrounding yourself with that positivity and that great energy and those powerful words. Find that space, whatever that space is for you. Find a space where you can be yourself and where you're surrounded by really good, positive people. So while finding that space and those people who are positive is very, very important, it's even more important that we're getting that strength from within. So how do we stop looking to others to provide our strength and confidence?
When we are so other focused, mm-hmm. we can try and get our energy and what we need from other people. And that's what I used to do. But what we can learn to do is to tap into the energy of the earth to give us the support that we need. So this, for me, is where grounding comes in. We can learn to ground to the earth to get the support that we need so that we no longer need to cling to other people for that support. You know, when I first learned about grounding, you know, it's such a simple thing in a way. You know, to find a way of developing a relationship with the earth, letting it support you.
So can you explain grounding for people who aren't familiar with it?
Yes, yes. So it can be as easy or as complicated as you want to make it, really. You can do it in like 2 seconds by literally just paying attention to your feet on the floor. Just feeling like perhaps the weight of your feet on the floor, noticing the contact of your feet on the floor. So that's what's so beautiful about it, is it can be done really quickly and easily. There are also meditations you can do, or longer grounding exercises, which give it more depth, help you maybe feel even more grounded, you know, where you can start like imagining roots coming out of the bottom of your feet and going like down deep into the earth. And then, you know, you could also start imagining that you're like a tree that is growing out of the earth. And be just feeling the strength of that you're like the trunk of a tree. And then, you know, that you have your branches and things growing out of the top of your head. It's just such a wonderful feeling of solidity and grounding that I think a lot of us can miss. You know, it's so easy to end up kind of floating around like in your head and being ungrounded.
Yeah, I find it particularly helpful when I'm in the beginning of a panic attack. I suffer from anxiety. And so if I'm starting to head into panic attack territory, I feel a bit disembodied. I feel like I'm floating above the ground. And if I'm in a really severe one, I feel like I'm going to fly off the bed. You know, I almost have to cling to things. And so grounding is a really useful exercise for me to feel connected and in my body again, versus sort of that floating feeling that some of us get with anxiety. And I love that, like you said, you don't have to make it a whole big ceremony and go outside and be in the grass. You can literally just feel your feet connected to the floor, and that can be grounding. It's accessible anywhere. I love that it has a practical application.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, if you can go out and feel the grass beneath your feet, then that is lovely too.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yes. Especially if you're somewhere where the grass is nice. Where I went to college, the grass was like straw. And it was, you really couldn't walk barefoot. And I really missed my Midwest grass. I didn't realize that was a thing until I went to college out of state. But I really missed my Midwest grass where it's just nice and soft. And Helen, our podcast is called Ashes to Wings, referring to the story of the phoenix transforming and rising from the ashes. I like to ask all of our guests this question. What does rise above mean in your life?
For me, rising above means rising above all of the defenses and untruths and things that I've taken on over the years, like these plates of armor that aren't really mine. And so it's, for me, it's like it's shedding those and uncovering the truth of who I am and like letting that out, letting that rise above rather than be weighted down by all these things that I was believing that just aren't true.
Such powerful imagery. That's beautiful. Helen, I always like to leave our listeners with a bumper sticker statement. So a summary of what you've just talked about that would fit on a bumper sticker. So what would your bumper sticker be?
You are not broken. You are whole. And you are enough.
Feels like balm to the soul. I had to close my eyes because it kind of hit like warm honey right in your soul. It's beautiful.
Yeah, the reason I say, you know, you are enough and you are whole is because it's something I think that I needed to hear an awful lot before it hit home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you're able to look back at where you were and help others through that space that you were in from a place of healing. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So I have a few rapid fire fun questions for you here for your game.
Uh-oh.
I promise nothing too scary. What is your favorite word?
Jenny, you can't ask me questions like that. My favorite word. My favorite word today is energy.
Ooh, I like that. That's great. What talent would you most like to have?
The talent I would most like to have is to be an amazing singer. I love singing, but I have my limits.
What style would you sing?
Pop music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is it something you would want to take on stage or you would just want for your own personal?
I would sing on stage if I felt able to.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in some ways, this comes back to, you know, finding my own voice.
Yeah.
So that is a journey that I'm still on, especially with singing, because I can sing. Mm-hmm. I know I can hold a tune, but if I press the record button or if I know somebody is listening to me, then my vocal cords just tighten up in this hideous way. And it sounds really bad.
Uh-huh. I did a singing competition when I was in high school and sounded great when I practiced at home, stepped on stage, and immediately my throat just tightened up and I sounded so shaky and nervous. And yeah, we'll have to do karaoke sometime.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
We are doing karaoke. Yes. Just tell me when. I love it. I love karaoke.
I haven't done it yet, so you'll have to show me the ways.
You'll love it.
What is your most treasured possession?
I like your questions, even though they're difficult. My most treasured possession is my guitar, which is called Hamlet.
Oh, I love that name.
Yeah.
Is it acoustic?
My guitar is an acoustic guitar, and I was given it instead of driving lessons. So my brothers were both given driving lessons, but I can't drive. And so instead, I was given a guitar and some guitar lessons. And the guitar, it means a lot to me because at the time when I first got it, it became an outlet for my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't have an outlet for them before, and I found it very, very difficult. I found I was just so overwhelmed with my feelings. But when I got a guitar, I suddenly had this amazing outlet. So I love my guitar.
Beautiful. What is your superpower?
My superpower is my listening skills.
Mm.
I have ninja listening skills. And this developed from a young age because I'm blind in one eye and I can't see very well. When I started at school, I had to pay such careful attention to what the teachers were saying because I couldn't read half of what they were writing on the board.
Oh, no.
And I was painfully shy, so I didn't want to ask what they were writing.
Yes.
So I just had to become very, very good at capturing every single thing that they were saying so I could then write it down. And I've taken that with me. You know, people were always amazed at how detailed my note taking would be at meetings.
Yeah.
They would ask me, you know, well, do you know shorthand? I'd be like, no. And they'd be surprised because my note taking was always just so detailed.
I love that. It's so funny because in episode 8, we talked with Nathan Blair about how what you may perceive as a flaw can actually become your greatest superpower. And I feel like that's what happened here. You know, it's something that was a struggle at one point, and now it's turned into something that you do incredibly well and has served you so well in your position. What are your favorite pizza toppings? This one's a little bit easier.
My favorite pizza topping is currently pepperoni. And that's really because I only recently discovered pepperoni on top of pizza. And so it's currently my favorite.
What were you eating before that?
I was eating like mainly just margaritas.
Oh, margarita pizza, not the drinks. I just lived on margaritas for 3 years.
Margarita pizza.
That's fantastic. I've been discovering, because I've been asking this of everybody, I'm discovering that people have really different pizza toppings in different countries. And I've heard everything from eggplant to sweet corn to, and I was like, wow, we really need to up our game in the US. We don't have all these amazing things for pizza.
Wow.
Our weirdest thing is pineapple and people freak out about that. So
Yeah, that's unusual.
Yes. All right. What book belongs on everyone's bookshelf?
I would say the book that everyone should read and have on their bookshelf is Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers.
Mm. Oh, that sounds like a good book.
It's a fantastic book. It definitely changed the direction of my life.
And it was recommended to me by somebody who I admired and who had kind of gone off and done their own thing. And they said to me, Helen, you need to read this book.
Hmm.
And I'm really glad they did.
All right. And then this is my favorite one to ask. What is your guilty pleasure song?
Well, as you know, I love dancing and singing.
Yes.
So there are all sorts of weird and wonderful songs that I love to dance and sing to. My current favorite for having a mad dance and sing to is Timber by, I think it's by Pitbull and Kesha.
Kesha, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I can just like completely let loose.
Yes. That's a really fun song to dance around to. So Helen does relationship coaching for recovering people pleasers with one-to-one and 12-week group programs. She also offers one-off workshops on different topics such as boundaries and codependency. Are these available on Zoom or are they all in person, Helen?
These are available on Zoom, yeah.
Wonderful. So you can join from anywhere, which is amazing. That's one of the good things to come out of this pandemic is we can access things all over the planet. And Helen, I know you have a free gift for our listeners. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I have a free book, Building Healthy Boundaries, an Overgiver's Guide on When to Say Yes and When to Say No in Relationships. And in it, I talk a bit about my own journey of realizing that I had no boundaries and what I did about that. I talk about what good boundaries look like, what weak boundaries look like. And I talk through the steps that I took and that anyone can take on figuring out what their boundaries are and then how to communicate them.
So good. Such a wonderful gift. Thank you so much for that. It's so generous. And you can find the link for that gift along with Helen's social media links on her guest page at our website. That's ashestowings.net/Helen-Snape, S-N-A-P-E. Make sure you give her a follow. Helen, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Jenny, so much for having me on.
It was lovely. It's time for another review shout out. This one comes from CMVHL and says, Jenny is just what we need in 2021 and needed in 2020. I can't wait to hear more. Thank you so much for leaving us a review. Make sure you rate and review us, and you might just hear your review read on the air. And just to recap our episode and talk about some of the takeaway points that Helen mentioned today, the first one is that we can learn to grow energetic boundaries to protect our energy and our emotions. And she gave us a few different ways that we can do that, including visualizing sort of a force field of protection around ourselves. The second is that as we build our core, we can learn to self-reference and know what is me and what isn't me. So important, especially if you're an empath. The third was that grounding will give you support rather than always having to cling to others for it. And she gave us a nice and simple way to ground that you can do anywhere, which is just feeling your feet on the floor. And Helen's bumper sticker was, you are not broken. You are whole. You are enough. These all resonate so strongly with our values here at Ashes to Wings. As a recovering people pleaser myself, I found this so helpful, and I hope that you, our listeners, learned a few ways to set some healthy boundaries in your lives. Don't forget to check out Helen's guest page and grab that free book. Again, that's ashestowings.net/Helen-Snape. Friends, thank you for listening. Don't forget to follow the show, rate, and review. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. The best way to learn is to teach someone else. So take one thing you learned today and share it with a friend. Find Jenny on Instagram at @the_Jenny_O'Connor and online at jennyoconnor.com. Subscribe for new episodes. Until next time, rise above.